Amen. Morning, church. Hope everybody's doing well this morning. I want to welcome in our Frederick campus, everybody who's hanging out with us online. Good to have you with us. Niwot campus, good to be with you. And we're going to be finishing out our series today that we started a couple weeks ago entitled, What Do I Do Now? We've been having some fun with this series and specifically this title because our church has been in a season of change and transition and change. And so in light of that, here's what we know, that oftentimes that when we are in these seasons, and a lot of times they are unforeseen seasons, anxiety will come to the top. Uncertainty will rise to the top. And with that come a bunch of all different kinds of emotions. And so here's the question that we've been kind of working through the last couple of weeks. And the question is this: how do I choose trust in the midst of uncertainty? And uncertainty is going to happen in your life. Unforeseen storms are going to happen in your life. It's not if, it's when. And so when they show up, how do we keep choosing trust? And specifically, in the context of our relationship with God, how do we trust God? How do we lean into our faith in such a way that we trust Him even when and if we don't know how long the storm's going to last or how it's going to turn out, even if we don't know, you know, what tomorrow brings or next week or next month or next year? How do we, as people of faith, lean into that and choose trust? Much easier said than done. And so here's what we said starting week one, a couple of weeks ago, that first step when we kind of find ourselves in the midst of a storm, and we leveraged a story that we've got in the New Testament with Jesus and his disciples on this boat. You just stay in the boat. That wherever Jesus is, you should just stay with him. And oftentimes in the midst of uncertainty, we feel like we don't have a lot of options. And oftentimes that's true. But as people of faith, one decision we do get to have is if we choose to lean in, not lean out of our relationship with Christ. And so we stay in the boat. Just a phrase that simply means wherever Jesus is, that's where we're going to be. So we're going to be consistent in, you know, participating in church gatherings and small groups and devotions and prayer and generosity. We're going to stick with Jesus in the midst of the storm, because following Jesus does not mean there won't be storms. There will be storms, but the first thing we do is we stay in the boat. And I love this. A couple weeks ago, I had a dad who's a part of our church who called me and said, "Hey, I just want to chat with you about that message after week one, because it was so encouraging for me, but it gave even my family some language that we use with one another." And he goes, "I just got to tell you this because it's so cool." But he has a daughter. I think she's in middle school. She was here last service, and he goes, she was having a tough week. And so I got on the phone. We were chatting, you know, in the middle of the week. And she's kind of working through all the things that's going on in her week. And he said that he said to his girl, "What are you going to do? What are you going to do? How are you going to respond this week?" And she just said, "Dad, I'm going to stay in the boat." And I love that. I love that. It's a phrase that even a middle schooler can go, "Hey, I'm going to take this with me. And I'm not going to let the uncertainty of life, you know, steal my joy this week." So anyways, I just love this. That's week one, all right? Stay in the boat. And then we got week two, which was last week, which was oftentimes in the midst of uncertainty, it's an opportunity for all of us to change our perspective, because most of us, if not all of us, our default in the midst of uncertainty is to go, "Woe is me," and "Where is God?" and "What is God doing?" And, you know, and now we're wrestling with, "Do I even believe in God? Is he worth it? Is it true?" And, you know, we just kind of keep going down this road. Or, as people of faith, in the midst of uncertainty, we can go, what if God is doing something? What if this isn't random? What, you know, yes, the world is filled with sin and people make bad choices and those choices have consequences and they affect you and me. But what if in the midst of this uncertainty that maybe you didn't even cause, God is going to use this for your good and for your future? And we went through the story of Joseph last week, who has an incredible story, who time after time after time again was faced with a decision, which was, am I going to trust God and just own the fact that God is going to use this for my good? And it turns out God did. Joseph, who, you know, almost got murdered and then was a slave and a convict, eventually became, you know, the vice president of Egypt. And through all of his hardships, God led him to a place where he essentially saved the lives of thousands and thousands and thousands of people. In the midst of uncertainty, all of us have a decision to make. What if God is up to something, and even if I can't see it, I will still trust him with it? And so here's the question that we're going to wrestle with today. We're going to close out this series, and here's the question. How do we mute the inner voice of fear so it doesn't stall our progress? Here's what we all have in common, that in the midst of uncertainty, we all have an inner critic. We have a voice that's inside of us that kind of leans into our ear and whispers things that essentially says, don't do it. Don't do it. This is too scary. Don't go over there, whatever, you know, and just don't do it. And the reason why we're asking this question, this is very important, especially for those of us who are people of faith, because here's what Jesus does. He does this over and over and over again with his disciples in the New Testament, but he consistently puts his disciples in positions where they must address their fear. Over and over and over again, Jesus intentionally puts his followers in a position that is by nature, just because we're human, we would all be afraid. Matthew chapter 10, Jesus gets his guys in the room and he says, boys, we've been together for a while, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to kind of split off two by two. So you two are a pair, and you two and you two. And I want you guys to go here, there, and you guys are going to go over there. And he's kind of giving them this pep talk, and he's going, you guys are going to do incredible things in my name, and you're going to heal people, and you're going to cast out demons. You're going to experience incredible ministry. And then, right in the middle of the talk, this is what he says. Matthew chapter 10, verse 16, he goes, also, because Jesus just keeps it real, he says, I'm going to be sending you out like sheep among wolves. To which, if we were in the room, we'd go, what? No. We're the wolves, right? Jesus goes, no, you're the sheep, and you're going to go out like wolves. And then, in the back half of his kind of, you know, raw speech, he says, so just so you guys know, some of you are going to be beaten for your faith. Some of you are going to end up in jail. I mean, you're going to go through incredible difficulties, and you know, just because you're kind of repping me, and that's just going to be the nature of how this is going to work. And again, if we were there, we would be like, what? And then he gets to the end of this whole talk, and after the positive and the negative, and then he goes, but boys, don't be afraid. To which I think most of the disciples in that room were probably afraid. What's the plan? Well, I want you to leave here. Don't bring a change of clothes. Don't bring any money. And I just want you to go and, you know, preach the gospel and tell people who I am. And just know when you do that, bad things are going to happen to you. But don't be afraid. There's a reason why, you know, if you go through the whole Bible, that right around 365 times we see phrases in the Bible that say, do not be afraid, be not afraid, fear not. It's the anthem of every angel in every story in the Bible. As soon as they show up, the first thing they say to whoever they're talking to, be not afraid. Do not be afraid. Jesus knows that fear is a human response. It's natural for all of us, but Jesus also knows most times that fear is a liar. It holds you back. It whispers lies into your ear, and there's this competition that's happening for your attention, and oftentimes your fears will keep you from stepping into the very thing that God is calling you to. And so today we're going to be talking about a story that if you grew up in church, you've heard this story. This is a story about Peter who attempts to walk on the water just like his rabbi, Jesus. And he gets a couple steps in and he falls a little bit short. And just even there, when I'm telling that story, some of you even right now are like, oh, you know, I've heard this story a million times. You grew up in church. You did the coloring book of Peter. You know, you got the whole deal. But here's the thing. Even if you've been a person of faith for a long time, I want you to engage in this story again, because for me, even this week, even the last couple of weeks, this story has been a good reminder and encourager for me. In the context of my faith, and here's why, because here's a question that all of us in the room can answer. Everybody online, you can answer this question. How different, think about this, how different would your life be without fear holding you back? I'm convinced every single person who's listening this morning, including me, all of us, all of our lives would look different in some ways and somehow if we didn't let fear hold us back. There's just no way. Fear is just such a natural human response. There's no way that anyone listening this morning is going, I'm not afraid of anything. Not true. Not true. And oftentimes we don't think about, how different our life potentially could look if fear did not exist. So how different would your life look? In the context, just the practicality of life, or spiritually speaking, in the context of your relationship with Jesus, how different might it look if fear wasn't holding you back? Before we get into the walking, on water part, right before that, there's a story of Jesus of the feeding of the 5,000. And both of these stories we find in 3 out of the 4 Gospels. And Jesus is on a mountainside. He's teaching to not just 5,000, more like 20,000 people. And he feeds them. And he does this miracle. All the disciples are watching, and they're all, pumped up. Everybody's excited. And what begins to happen in the crowd? There's a stir in the crowd that's saying, man, this guy, maybe he is the Messiah. Maybe he is the Son of God. Maybe he is the one who we've been waiting for, and he's going to deliver us from Rome. Just like Moses, delivered the Israelites out of Egypt, Jesus is going to do the same. And Jesus knows this is not, the narrative that he wants, but the disciples are eating it up. They're all excited, and they're just engaged, and, they're ready to go because they're arguing about who's going to be the greatest, in the kingdom. So Jesus knows all of this, and that's kind of on the back end of the beginning of the story that we're going to talk to today. And this is why Mark, he writes this, Mark chapter 6, where he says, immediately, and that's why Jesus is not liking the conversation that's going on, almost like the doctrination of his disciples with this crowd. So he gets them out of there very fast, and he goes, immediately Jesus made his disciples get into the boat. And the reason why Jesus made his disciples get into the boat, because the last time they were in the boat, that was week 1 of this series, these guys thought they were going to die. So they're probably not too excited to get back in a boat anytime soon. But because of the crowd and the conversation, Jesus goes, guys, you're going to get in the boat. So he made his disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to Bethsaida. And while he dismissed the crowd, and after leaving them, he went on to a mountainside to pray. So I love this, okay? So Jesus is like, boys, we got to go. He gets them in the boat. And I wish this is a moment I'd like to be there if I could see this, because I think the disciples think Jesus is going to get in the boat with them. But he doesn't. Jesus is, guys, we got to go. He gets in there, and I think Jesus just kind of shoves them off the shore. And as they start going out into the lake, they're kind of looking back going, what? Where are you going? And he's just kind of doing this deal, like, boy, see ya. He just pushes them off. And again, anxiety is high. Because again, last time they were in the boat, the only reason they're thinking they didn't die is because Jesus was with them. But Jesus has other plans. It's very interesting. In the middle of this, these kind of major ministry stories, Jesus takes a pause, pushes the boat off, and he goes, you boys will be all right. I've got to go pray. He dismisses the crowd and he prays. So here's just a little plug for next week, because next week we're starting a new series called The Praying Messiah. I'm very excited about this series. And the kind of the tagline for the series is Jesus didn't have to pray. He needed to pray. And if the Son of God needed to pray, you and I need to pray too. And so I'm really excited about this series. So anyway, just a plug for that. The next couple of weeks we'll be talking about prayer. I think it'll be very powerful, very impactful for all of us in the context of our faith. But he pushes the boys out into the lake. And when you read this story in the book of John, you get the feeling that the disciples have no idea where Jesus is. Now, we know that Jesus is kind of goes up into the mountainside. He still has a view. He can kind of see what's going on. But the disciples, they cannot see him. And the story continues, verse 47. So later that night, so they've been out there for a while. The boat was in the middle of the lake, and he was alone on land talking about Jesus. And he saw the disciples straining at the oars because the wind was against them. And for some of you, even this morning, that's how you feel like your life is going right now. That the wind is against me. That's how those guys felt. They don't even want to be in this boat. They thought Jesus was going to be with them. They're trying to get across this lake. It's not going well because the wind is pushing them back. It's probably somewhere in like the 3 a.m., 4 a.m. time frame. They've been going at this for hours. They're barely halfway across this lake. Now, the body of water they're on is the Sea of Galilee, and you'll hear this a lot. If you're new to faith or new to church, Jesus does so many ministry, you know, miracles and teachings around kind of this body of water. The Sea of Galilee, it's essentially like 17, you know, miles long. It's about 7 miles wide. At the deepest part, it's about 140 feet deep. So it's not a huge body of water, but it's big enough, and it's kind of nestled in this valley. And so if you live in Colorado, most of you here do, you get this vibe that, you know, oftentimes storms can come off the mountains and the weather here can change in an instant, can't it? It can be sunny, and then 10 minutes later it's windy, and then 10 minutes later it's snowing, and then 10 minutes later it's sunny. Okay, that's just how it works. Weather comes over the mountain, you can't always see it. Well, in the context of this valley and this sea, there's so many stories of these guys getting caught in storms. And the reason why is because this weather is coming in over the mountains into this valley. So this is the environment that we're in. This is where all this is taking place. So verse 48, it says this. Mark keeps going, "Shortly before dawn, he," talking about Jesus, "went out to them." Jesus is doing Jesus stuff here. "Walking on the lake, and he was about to pass by them." And I love we get this detail. It was as if Jesus wasn't even going to say, "Hey." He was just going, "I got to get to the other side as well. You boys, you know, you've been in the boat, but I can do Jesus stuff." So he's just walking on by. "But when they," the disciples in the boat, "saw him," Jesus, "walking on the lake, they thought he was a ghost. And they did what you and I would have done if we were on the boat that day. They cried out because they all saw him and were afraid." They were terrified. "And he spoke to them." Jesus spoke to them and said, now look what Jesus says. "Take courage, it is I. Don't be afraid," which is really easy for Jesus to say, really difficult for us to adhere to. Really difficult, Jesus, not to be afraid right now when we're in the middle of this lake and there's wind and we're tired and we're exhausted and things aren't going very well. And I don't know about you, but if you were to see a ghost, I don't know if you've ever been on the boat and saw a ghost walking on water. We should talk if you have. I'd love to hear that story. But if we were on that boat, come on, we would be out of our mind scared. We would be losing it. We would be hiding. We would be pleading. I mean, we'd be praying the prayers of, "Lord, get me off this boat as soon as you can. Get me to the other side. I don't want to be here. I don't want to deal with this. I'm tired. I'm exhausted." I think there's probably disciples crying. There's got to be one or two of them like throwing up over the side of the boat. I mean, it is chaotic. It is scary. The unknown, the uncertainty of how this is going to turn out has risen to the top again. And then we got Peter. We go to Matthew's gospel. He gives us a little bit more detail because Matthew was there. Matthew goes, and then Peter, look, yells out to this ghost, not knowing if it was Jesus or not yet, but Peter somehow has an inclination. Maybe it's Jesus. So Peter yells out, "Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water." And Jesus just says, "Well, come on then." Now, I don't know if Peter thought that, you know, the reality of him walking on water was going to actually happen. Peter, you know, he speaks first, he thinks later, he runs first. I mean, he's just always that guy. He's putting his foot in his mouth kind of a deal. I just think it's interesting that in the midst of this chaos and wind and potentially seeing a ghost, the first thought for Peter is, well, that might be Jesus. And so he yells out to Jesus. Meanwhile, everyone else in the boat is like, "Stop talking." If you and I were there, we'd be like, "Peter, we don't talk to ghosts. Let that ghost go where that ghost wants to go. We don't need to mess around with that. We, you know, our day's been tough enough." Peter goes, no, I'm just going to see if maybe that's Jesus. They're like, "It's not Jesus." He's going, "Yeah, it is. Come on, it might be." So he yells out. And this ghost, who we know is Jesus, potentially calls his bluff. He says, "Well, yeah, if you want to come walk out in this water, just come on. Just get out the boat." That's what Peter does. Verse 28, "And then Peter got down out of the boat, and he walked on the water and came toward Jesus. And I imagine as Peter is stepping off, you know, stepping over the edge of the boat, all the disciples, because they're all afraid, and Peter's got to be afraid a little bit, I would assume. I mean, everybody's yelling at Peter, don't do it. Peter, don't do it. If you step over, you don't even know if that's Jesus, and if you step over this boat, you are going to die. There is no way you're going to walk on water. You're not God. You're not a ghost. Don't do it. Come on, this is going to be the dumbest decision you've ever made in your life, because today is going to be the last day of your life. If you decide to step off this boat, don't do it. Now, I know week one, and we already talked about it, you know, this morning. Week one, the whole bottom line was stay in the boat, which Peter doesn't do. And I bet you the disciples there, and they were like, Peter, you should listen to Matt. He's a great teacher. In week one of our series, you're supposed to stay in the boat. You're not doing what you're supposed to do, but you need to remember, okay? Here's what we got to remind ourselves. The reason why we're staying in the boat isn't necessarily because of, you know, we're safer, although it can feel like that in moments of storms. It's not that it's any calmer or even quieter. The reason why we're staying in the boat is because Jesus is in the boat. We just need to be close to Jesus. But in this story, Jesus is not in the boat. So what does Peter do? I think Peter, essentially, he gets it right, but he just decides to get out of the boat. He does. It feels weird that we're saying this now in week three to go, wait a minute, do we stay in the boat or do we get out of the boat? No, we just go wherever Jesus is. And Peter thinks that it's his rabbi who's in the middle of this lake going for a walk. And it seems as though he's got enough faith that he can at least talk to and ask permission for, being as close to Jesus as he can. Now, we don't know his intentions. I mean, outside of just having a really cool story of walking on water, I don't know, but there's something happening in the life of Peter in this moment. I think this is a very pivotal moment for Peter and his following of Jesus. So he gets out of the boat and he starts walking towards Jesus. And here's what happens, verse 30. But when he saw the wind, he did not listen to Jesus. Jesus says, don't be afraid. Peter was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. And he says this, you of little faith, why did you doubt? Which seems pretty harsh, doesn't it? Nobody else that day was, you know, walking on water outside of Jesus. Nobody else in the boat got out, but Peter did. And Jesus had his attention for a couple of steps, but then isn't this how it works in our life? All of a sudden, the reality and the practicalities of life begin to kind of bump up against our faith, and we begin to wonder, I don't know, this is pretty wild. I mean, you would think a couple of steps of walking on water, Peter's faith would just kind of, you know, rise to the occasion, but it doesn't, because he takes his eyes off of Jesus and he looks at the realities of the waves and the wind, and he begins to think, because this is what fear does, fear gets into his ear and going, you can't walk on water. What are you doing? That was so silly to get out of that boat, and now you are going to drown. And this is how it is for me, and maybe potentially this is how it is for you, that we can even rally together on Sunday and go, hoorah, you know, we love Jesus, and yes, we do, and we sing the songs, and we will raise our hands, and we'll even give money, and we'll serve, and God, we want to be like you. And then Jesus shows up in our life, and he's kind of out there, because we oftentimes don't realize that Jesus will oftentimes lead us into the unknown and into the uncertainty, because that's where he does some of his best work. But he's out there and we're like, Jesus, we want to follow you. Yes, we do. And he just goes, well, come on. And then all of a sudden the practicality of life kicks in and we go, well, how far do I have to walk out? And how does this really work? Because I've never walked on water before. I've never done this before. And Jesus keeps going, well, just come on then. well, how long is this season going to last, and how much is it going to cost, and you know, where is it going to land me? And Jesus goes, no, come on, I'm not giving you all of that. Just come on. You want to be close to me. You're a follower of me. Well, just take a step. Take a step, take a step, take a step, take a step. And here's what Peter teaches us, and this is what I've been reminded of this week. This has been encouraging for me, this exercise, but here's what happens. Fear, Peter's fear, it can reveal where our faith can be strengthened. Whatever it is, that thing that you're afraid of, if you can acknowledge it and at least write it down, this is an opportunity for God to lean in and go, you don't have to be afraid, even when there's something to be afraid of. Peter, what are you afraid of? And Peter would go, drowning. And Jesus would go, you don't have to be afraid of that because you're on the water with me. You're being faithful. Just keep your eyes on me. And Peter would go, yeah, but these waves. And Jesus would go, don't worry about the waves. Worry about being obedient. Worry about following. What are you afraid of? It might be the very thing that God is calling you into. I don't have time this morning, but I feel like most times the things that I'm scared of is the very thing that Jesus says, come on. Come on, trust me in this. I know you're afraid. Come on, come on, come on. Rarely does he call us into things that we already feel confident about. No, come on. We're going to grow you, Matt. Step on out. Why? Jesus, I've never done this before. I know. Trust me. Come on. Well, I have some questions. I'm not answering all your questions. Just come on out here. Just take a step of faith. And oftentimes our fears are the very thing that God is going to call us into. What are you afraid of? You afraid of some money issues? You afraid about paying a bill this week? Or are you afraid about even the idea of tithing or giving to the local church or being generous with what you have because your budget is so tight and you are overwhelmed and you are afraid? Are you afraid of your marriage ending or failing? Are you afraid of a close friendship that isn't going well? I mean, what relationally, what are you afraid of? What is it that you're afraid of? Are you afraid of it's some health issues or potentially losing a loved one? What the very things that we're afraid of, oftentimes I feel like this is what God is calling us into, and he's going, you got to trust me with this. You just keep your eyes on me. Do not be afraid. Don't be afraid. And here's what you'll learn. If you'll be bold enough, if you'll be courageous enough, if you choose not to be afraid and at least take a couple steps, here's what you'll find. That God is right in the midst of whatever that thing is. These guys have been afraid. These fishermen have been afraid over and over again of these storms. And Jesus has been with them in all of them. These guys, Peter, he's afraid of drowning right now. Mark tells us that Jesus immediately was right there to rescue him. This is where God does some of his best work. And then the story concludes, here's what it says. And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. And then those who were in the boat worshiped him, saying, glad that wasn't me out there, you know. They said, truly, truly, you are who you say you are. You've got to be the Son of God. Man, we've never seen anything like that. You just fed 20,000 people with a couple pieces of bread and some fish, and now we just saw you call out one of our guys. And he walked on water, at least for a couple of steps. And we saw you essentially walk 3 miles on water to the middle of this lake. So here's what I want to do. Just real quick, 4 walking on water lessons. I just want to give you reminders as we close out this series today. This is like swim lessons, but it's better. All right, you don't even have to get wet. You can just walk on water. Okay, so walking on water lessons. Here's a reminder. Things and listen, if you're not like in the midst of a storm right now, if your life's just going great and everything's good, you should still write these 4 things down because there's a day coming that won't be as calm and collected as today. All right, so here's the first thing. Storms don't mean God isn't there. This is a reminder of week 1. It's another reminder for week 3. Do not mistake the storms of your life for God's absence. This is a trap we fall into all the time. We start jumping out of the boat. We start questioning everything about our faith because your life isn't going how you think it should go. But friends, it's never going to go exactly how you think it should go. There are storms for all of us in the future. And when they show up, I'm just telling you what would be awesome, especially for our middle schoolers and high schoolers to remember, is that just because we're in a storm does not mean God is not with us. He is with us. Storms don't mean that God isn't there. God was there for all the storms of the disciples, and he's there for you in your storms as well. Here's the second thing. Fear is natural. Fear is natural. It's a human response, but don't let it lead. It is not a good leader. Fear is not a good leader in your life. If you follow it, it'll lead you to places you don't want to go, or it'll keep you from places that you do want to go. It's a bad leader. And oftentimes when fear creeps into the context of spiritual conversations, we should ignore it. We should push it aside and keep doing these other two things. Here's the third thing. We need to focus. Focus is everything. Focus is everything. Where is Jesus? There's a storm in my life. I'm not jumping, you know, the ship. I'm staying with Jesus. I'm going to stay as close to Jesus as I can. I'm not going to be afraid. I'm not going to let fear overcome me. And I'm going to do everything I can to focus on the most important thing. This is what Peter had right for a couple of steps. And then he took his eyes off of Jesus. If he would have kept his eyes on Jesus, he probably would have made it out to however far Jesus was. But he lost his focus. He allowed other things to creep into his heart and mind, and he began a different narrative. Right in the middle of doing something incredible, walking on water, that narrative changed in a second, and it turned into, I'm going to drown. And the reason why is because he lost his focus. And here's the fourth thing to remember is this, that even when we're sinking, we're not alone. And this is what we got to remember. That if we're brave enough, if we have enough courage, if we choose not to be afraid and we focus on Jesus, just know whatever it is he's calling you into, you will not be perfect in all of your steps. You will not be perfect. You will not get everything right. And for some of you, the fear is, what if you don't get it right? And I would just tell you, you're not going to be perfect. In your following of Jesus, you're not going to be perfect, and the things he's calling you into will not be perfect. There will be ups and downs and days you got it right and days you got it wrong. But when we get it wrong, when we fall short, here's a reminder, just like for Peter, Jesus was right there. Immediately, he saved Peter, and immediately he'll save you. He'll call you back up. He'll get you back in the boat. He'll restore you. He'll get you recalibrated and go, let's try that again. Let's try it again. Now, let me just say this. A confession time, and you can be honest too, but I'll just confess for myself. I have never walked on water. If you have, let's talk, okay? But I've never walked on water. I've never walked on water, and the reason why I've never walked on water, because I've never been on a boat and saw a ghost who potentially was Jesus, and I yelled out to him, and he told me to come. But I hope, isn't this what we hope? Don't we hope that in those moments when Jesus is calling, that we would have enough faith to take a step? But if we're honest, how often do we stay? And at the end of your life, end of my life, all of us, end of the day, we're going to have stories. And you're going to have stories, and as a church, we're going to have stories. And here's what I know to be true when it comes to these kind of stories, that if you want to walk on water story, then you're going to have to get out of the boat. You're not going to be able to stay in the boat and tell the story of how you follow Jesus, who was in the middle of this lake, and how you walked on water. At the end of Peter's life, you know, let's say 20 years after this story, maybe he's hanging out having lunch with the other disciples. And how many times did Peter tell this story? Peter, tell us again. Peter, tell us again. What was it like that you walked on water? Tell us again, Peter. And Peter's telling the story. And yeah, did Jesus lean into Peter and go, man, you didn't have, you know, where was your faith, Peter? You had it and you lost it. And man, you know, you had the courage, but you just messed up a couple of steps. But guess what? The other guys that were out in the boat that day didn't get to tell the story that Peter got to tell. Their story was, I saw. I watched. I watched somebody exercise their faith. I watched someone be bold and courageous who didn't even get it all right. I just watched. But Peter got to say, no, I went for it. I went for it. I went for it. I went for it. And how many stories are you and I giving up because we've allowed fear to creep in and uncertainty to overwhelm us? And we go, I think Jesus is out there. That may or may not be his voice, but I refuse to take a step because it is too scary. It is too windy. I'm going to stay right where I am. So here's the question I want you to think about today. What step of faith? What step of faith is Jesus asking you to take? What is it? Some of you, you've known this step that you're supposed to, you should have took years ago, and you've been wrestling, you've been pushing back because you don't have all your, answers, you don't have all your questions answered, and you're not sure about this or that, but I'm just telling you, in your heart, you know this is the thing that God is calling you to, and you've been making excuses of why you shouldn't, and potentially even the people around you are going, yeah, you shouldn't do that. That's wild. That's crazy. That costs too much, takes up too much time. I totally get it. Meanwhile, Jesus is leaning into your fears and going, no, come on. This is the step you should take. What is it for you? If you're brave enough, if you've got enough courage to go, okay, I don't know where this leads. I don't know how long. I don't know how much it costs, but I will take a step. Here's the final reminder. Here's the question that we started with today. How do we mute? Because fear is going to creep in. It is a natural response for all of us. And it's going to whisper lies, and it's going to try to paralyze you and hold you back. So what do we do with that so that we don't allow it to stall our progress, our forward motion? As followers of Jesus, here's what we do. We choose to not fix our eyes on the ways. We choose not to fix on all the circumstantial things, all the reasons why you shouldn't do this. That's not what we do. Instead, we choose to focus on the one who walks on them, talking about the waves. We focus on the one who's been there and done that. We focus on the one who died and came back from the dead. We focus on the one who fed 20,000 people with a little bit of bread and a little bit of fish. We focus on the one who's already out in the midst of uncertainty, who says to you and me, come on, come on, come for a swim. Come on, come walk on water with me. And when we do, you and I have opportunity years from now at the end of our life to talk to the next generation and tell them the same thing. Boys, girls, don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. You can trust them. You can bank your whole life on them. And you can trust them not just with some, but with all. You can trust them with your time and your energy and your money and your family and your relationships. You can trust them with it all. So what do we do? What do we do? What do we do now? Life isn't going how we thought. What do we do? Here's what we do. We stay close to Jesus. We change our perspective. As people of faith, God is up to something. And if God is over there, then we're going to do our best to take steps to follow after him. That's what we should do. So here's what I'm going to do. Next couple of minutes, both campuses want you to lean in a little bit of a family meeting. So I want to tell you about some things that we are really passionate about here as a church and some changes that are coming that I hope fill you with more excitement than uncertainty. But you already know the biggest one. If you're new here, I stepped into the lead pastor role just a little bit ago. And so that's a big change for our church. And with that, there come some other changes that as we look at our leadership and our org chart. And that's what I want to talk a little bit about with you the next couple of minutes. And the reason why, okay, you got to hear this. The reason why we make changes because we want to steward what God has already given to us. We want to steward our resources and our finances. We want to steward our leadership in such a way because at Rocky, we are very passionate about reaching people who do not know Jesus. And so because of that, we're willing to kind of make change, not just for change's sake, but change for maybe the future stories of people who have yet to discover who Jesus is, that in the midst of how we steward and lead God's church, this specific local church, that we would lead it in such a way that more people, more baptisms, more stories of life change, more generosity. We just want more. And so that's the heart behind some of these changes. So NIWAD campus, this one really affects you, and then Fred, update for you. But NIWAD campus, you guys know Amanda Warbaugh, isn't she awesome? She's great. Yeah. I like her. Okay. And so, I've led with Amanda the whole time. You know, I've been at Rocky 10 and a half years ago when I showed up. In fact, one of the first times I met Amanda, she was serving here at the NIWAT campus in our children's ministry. And just even off the bat, I remember saying to her, man, I'm surprised you're not doing more. You don't have more influence because you seem like a great leader. And I'm just telling you, over the last 10 years, it's been awesome to watch her jump into different, you know, leadership transition roles and just leading. She does such a great job, one of the best leaders at our church. And so in the midst of this transition and looking out into the future, I jumped into a conversation with Amanda somewhere along the way and said, hey, I want you to consider stepping into an executive pastor role. Okay, so now on campus, she's not leaving, but I want her to consider stepping into an executive pastor role because I think she's at a place in her leadership where she can offer and she can do more. And she goes, well, what does that mean? Well, it means really two big things. One, that she will work alongside with me and some of the strategic conversations and work alongside our leadership team, being in big conversations regarding our church. But also, and this is other big part of this role, that she will oversee ministry and operations, not just at one campus, but both campuses. So it's an incredibly big role for her, but I'm telling you, it is the right time and she is the right person. So both campuses, here's what I want you to do. Round of applause for Amanda as she comes up on stage. I was just thinking, we missed a major opportunity. We could have had a boat here and then you like get out of the boat. You know what I'm saying? And it's like,
row the boat.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, you guys love Amanda and, just chat a little bit about this transition for you.
Yeah. First of all, I just want to say, thank you. I love being the NIWAT campus pastor and my growth over the last 5 years is due a lot to you guys, how you've supported me, loved me, come alongside me. So super thankful for that, but I'm excited. I'm excited to take this new role, to work with Matt, excited for Rocky, where we're going to go, Fred Campus. I'm excited to come hang out with you guys a little bit more. I'm not going away. You're still going to see me. I'm going to be around, still going to be on stage, hanging out with you guys. But super excited for what's next. And hopefully you're asking the question, right? If I'm not going to be the campus pastor anymore, you think maybe Matt and I have lost our minds. Now we don't have a campus pastor at either campus. But we do. Yeah, we do. So we've been chatting behind the scenes, and I am excited to tell you that the next NIWAT campus pastor is going to be the one and only Nick Carver. So Nick has led around this place for the last 11 years. He's been leading worship and doing an awesome job. I like to tease him about his hair. He's got great hair, right? You got your new campus pastor.
He does. He really does.
Yeah. But Nick has done an amazing job leading at this place. And I'm just going to share a little story from today, actually, to show you the impact that he has on our community. My sweet husband makes me coffee every single morning, but this morning we were in a hurry. That didn't happen. I went to Starbucks. I'm in the Starbucks line, and the lady says, "You're up early. What are you doing?" And I'm like, "I'm going to church." She said, "Where do you work?" "I work at Rocky." And she's like, "I know some family at Rocky. We play sports with their kids." And so I'm like, "Tell me more." And it turns out that her daughter plays soccer with Nick's daughter, Caroline. And the fun story of that is she just said, "That family is amazing. We love them." And I'm like, thank you for going to Starbucks this morning just to hear, like, Nick is making an amazing impact on our community, and he's going to be an amazing campus pastor for you guys.
That's awesome.
Thank you, Amanda. I love that we have two services that I can hear her say these things about me. It's encouraging to my self-confidence. But I'm glad that you guys have already reiterated that point, that you're not going anywhere. You know, we came here 11 years ago, my Amanda and family, and we had three girls under the age of five. And then we had another one while we were here. And then our oldest is getting her license in a month. So we've been here a long time. And you've been a huge part of serving our family, pastoring our family. Matt, we love you too.
Thank you.
But we really love Amanda. And I love that you're not going anywhere. And Frederick, in fact, you're gaining Amanda also. So it's really encouraging. But watching you guys over the last 5 years, serving NIWAT and FRED campuses to fight for your campus, what's best for your campus, to help your campus become healthy and keep moving forward, but also working together so that we can serve our communities as one church. It's been huge. Can't wait to see that continue.
That's awesome. Hey, give these two some love again. It's awesome. I'm excited. They are the right people for this season of ministry, and I'm excited to lead alongside of them. So NIWAT campus, they'll be hanging out here after service. Go say hey to them out in the lobby. Two more quick things. One, FRED campus, I'm sure you're thinking, hey, you know, what's going on with the Frederick campus pastor position? And unfortunately, we're just not at a place to make an announcement because we are still in the midst of interviewing, having discussions with some folks. And so just know we are engaged in that. And when the time is right, obviously, we're going to be excited to share who we just believe is the right person for the right season in that role. And the last thing is this. If you've been to Kenya before, maybe you get some of their emails and updates. But this is something for us as a church I want us to be praying for and for some of you to potentially even give towards. And so we got news this last week from Missions of Hope International there in Kenya, specifically right where we serve in the Mathari slums, that there is incredible flooding that is happening right now. They're in the midst of their rainy season. That's even going to continue the rainy season for a couple more weeks. And so we just got some videos and photos in our hearts for those of us, again, who have been there are just broken because these are people who live on less than a dollar a day, who have very little. And for some of them, last week lost everything. And so it'll be a total reset for that community in Mohi, excuse me, from a church standpoint. Wish I could talk right. is going to be looking at what they're going to be doing. And so that's going to take time and finances. And so here's what you're going to get from us. We're going to send an email to our church, everyone in our church, to say, hey, this is one of our global partners. Be praying for them. Some of you are going on a trip in October. I'm going to be there in June. But we're also going to give you a link that if you want to, and I hope you do, if you want to give above and beyond what you would normally give to Rocky and go, hey, we want to help out folks who right now have way less than what we have or are literally in the midst of a storm and the unknown. This is the beauty of the church. We're all on one team. So I hope you jump in and participate in that, and you'll see that this week. So both campuses online, let me pray for us, and we'll get on to the rest of the day. So Father, we love you. We love you. We love you. We love you. And I pray this morning for the one who finds himself in the midst of the unknown and a storm and life is uncertain. I pray that you would remind all of our hearts this morning that you are trustworthy. You have demonstrated your love for us. And so I pray that our response in the midst of uncertainty would be to lean into you and to be bold enough and mature enough in the midst of uncertainty to go, God has got to be up to something, that we would change our perspective. And that as a church and followers of you, that when you call us, when you lead us into the unknown, we own the fact it is scary. It is easy for us to become afraid and paralyzed, but I pray that we would be courageous enough not to allow doubt and fear to keep us from the very stories that you want to tell through our lives and through this church. So we love you, and I pray that you would encourage all of us this week to take a step of faith into something that you are leading us in. And we pray all this in the name of Jesus. Amen.